Good day, nerds, and welcome to another Cantina Conversation with our book reviewer, Megan, and Adeline Grace. Adeline Grace was previously on the podcast. She was promoting new book at that time, All the Stars and Teeth, and she's back this time promoting All the Tides of Fate, her brand new book that just came out on February 2nd. Now, if you haven't read the first book, you are warned that there are some spoilers for the first book here in this interview. But if you've already read the book, they keep it spoiler-free on All the Tides of Fate. And without any further ado, let's get to the interview between Megan and Adeline Grace.
All right, we're here with Adeline Grace, author of All the Tides of Fate, the sequel to All the Stars and Teeth. Tides comes out on February 2nd, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, correct.
Okay, Groundhog Day. We're coming up close here. First of all, once again, thank you so much for making the time to talk to us again today. Like I said, you're another return guest, and we're always excited to have people return and talk about sequels, and it helps our like readers and our listeners to kind of like have, you know, the part two of it after so much anticipation. So I really appreciate it, and really excited for you that we're coming up on your release date here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here too. Of course, I wish that we could meet again at a convention. That was so much fun, but alas, maybe next year.
I know. I remember you were able to squeeze me in before breakfast, I think. I know you had a busy weekend, but it was, there was a lot going on, but it was fun. And it's like now it's like, oh man.
Yeah, I think that was like a week before everything shut down.
Yeah, it was crazy. Mm-hmm. It was like we squeezed it in there before, the world caught fire. Mm-hmm. first of all, I hope you're doing well, you know, mind, body, and soul. Last year was kind of rough. And it seems like maybe this year is kind of getting off to a rough start too, but we're all hanging in there. So it's great to see you, and I hope you're doing well.
Yeah, thank you. I hope you are too. I don't think any of us ever expected, you know, it to take, let alone to happen, but for it to take this long to still be in quarantine and, you know, politics and the government and everything happening. Much is happening, but I feel kind of just like, at least in terms of COVID, kind of settled into the new norm, right? At least. So that's, I guess, good. I can't wait for it to be over, of course.
Oh, but yeah, definitely. I know, and it sucks just because it's winter now, so we're like all limited to even fewer options than we mm-hmm. were before. Even in the publishing world, at least I think writers can do their work no matter what. So, it just depends on like the aftermath. Like this past year, we can hop right into it, is like, how did your experience of releasing this sequel, All the Tides of Fate, compare to your experience with releasing the first book, which was like a year earlier, right?
Yeah, so it's really different. I mean, when I released All the Stars and Teeth, I was very lucky to have it come out right before quarantine and COVID hit. I remember when I was going on tour, it had started, like talks of COVID had started, and I wore my mask on the planes and everybody kept looking at me funny. And I even heard, it's so funny thinking about, because I even heard one of the stewardesses was like, oh yeah, people are taking this COVID thing like way too seriously. Like, look at her wearing a mask. Ah. And now I'm just like, wow, everybody is wearing a mask, and it has hit so much harder than I ever expected it would. So I was very fortunate to, you know, still get my tour, to still get some events. I had a lot canceled because COVID started about a month after All the Stars and Teeth released.
Yeah.
And bookstores closed, you know, so that was really hard in terms of sales, and my publisher, my imprint shut down. So there's a lot going on in terms of publishing. I'm really sorry if you hear my puppy.
Oh, it's okay. I don't mind. Mine might come down and demand to play with her. So I get it.
Okay. Yeah. We just got her. She's 8 weeks old. So she's still learning how to live in the world.
Yeah. Like getting used to her new environment and all that. No, because I follow you on Instagram, and I know you had to say goodbye to a couple pets.
Yes, I did. That was hard. Thank you.
Yeah. But I'm glad, you know, you just get out there and you've given a new puppy a good home.
Thank you. I'm really excited to have her, but hopefully she stays quiet during this. But yeah, I mean, I was fortunate, and there's still been a lot of hardships to just, you know, a lot of specifically young adult imprints have closed down. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was 100% because of COVID, but it was certainly, you know, propelled by COVID. It happened quicker probably because of that. And just publishing in general is having a harder time with sales. So it's been a journey to figure out. But this one is quieter. That's all I know. It's a lot. It feels a lot more lonely and quiet because we don't have physical arcs for this book either. We don't have advanced copies because publishers, you know, are kind of scaling back on that.
For sure. Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I know it's kind of one of those, but reading luckily is one of those safe activities, I guess. Like even if you don't want to buy a physical copy, at least, you know, your Kindle or your digital reader is ideally safe for you to use if it's yours.
Right.
So you can just download away and hopefully, and I think that's, you know, for me at least, I think reading has been I mean, it's always been a way to escape, but that's why I appreciate that, you know, you and other writers in the industry is still trying to find ways to work around it. And also just trying to get creative with promoting your books too, because reading for me is one of those ways that I can unwind. And like I really liked All the Stars and Teeth, and I was so excited that, you know, the release date was coming up. And so I was like, you know, I finished it pretty quickly because I just like powered through it. And then, you know, I'm going to do my best to be spoiler free here, but yeah, it's, I have so many thoughts that I can't even, I remember like complaining to my husband, like, I can't even talk to anybody about it. Cause the book's like technically not out yet. Like, I feel the same. Yeah. I know. It's like, how do you keep posting about this and getting excited without, you know, just saying, oh, by the way, you know, I don't even want to say too much, but yeah, it's like, how do you keep your mouth shut and still like get excited and get everybody else excited? But I will vouch that there's plenty to get excited about. So, okay, let me go through my notes here. So we got, So Amora is queen and she's, you know, facing some skepticism as she fills her role, but then so this book is a little bit more political, it seems like, or there's like more PR involved in terms of, you know, whatever you're doing, it has to like look good, or how do you spin it when there are eyes everywhere. While she's also like dealing with some serious PTSD from the events of the first book. So I guess like, I know that's kind of like a big loaded statement, but I guess like, what kind of like research went into like, maybe having to research mental health symptoms, or maybe like how it might go into your, you know, in the person's brain, how that works. Cause I feel like you did a really good job of getting that across of Amora's just like, she's dealing with it internally. And then she's got to deal with all this other political BS that she knew that she had to take on. But then I think, you know, she's almost a little bit over her head here, you know, and handling all that. So like, yeah, like kind of like, what kind of research went into it? Where did you go for inspiration? How did you decide where you wanted to take this second story?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of different things. I talked to a lot of people, you know, I've read a lot, and also I've drawn from personal experiences on a much more minor scale. Like I have faced PTSD with certain things, and where Amora draws, she kind of learns to lean into music to sort of let her thoughts wander back down from that, like, you know, major episode. Right. And that was something that was like personal to me that I had to listen to Disney music. Like anytime I drove a car, cause I got in a bad car accident and I broke part of my spine and two ribs. Wow. And anytime I was driving, like I would just like freak out and start to get really, really nervous. But if I listened to something that was really familiar and I could just focus on the lyrics and the song, it kind of helped me relax. So that's where, you know, she gets that from. That was a personal sort of experience. But in terms of Amora, I mean, she's just really doubting herself. And there's a lot that goes into that with, I mean, she now bears the weight on her shoulders of a situation that she never expected.
Yeah.
She has been burdened with so much. And also a huge part of it is she's a woman, she's female. And she's a young woman.
Yep.
And, you know, I live in the world as a young woman and there's a lot that goes into that.
Yep.
And people constantly, you know, doubt you or underestimate you. And with her in particular, you know, there's a line, I wish I remembered exactly verbatim, but her mother basically tells her, you know, it's easier for your father. Mm-hmm. Like people saw him as strong and bold and charming. But if you do the things that he does, people aren't going to see you like that. They're going to see you like in a negative light. They want you to feel soft. They want you to feel like somebody they can trust. So they, you know, go on this kind of ridiculous charade of trying to pair her up with a husband, essentially, because that's going to make her softer, because her people need to see that in order to view her as the kind of queen that, like, they've been essentially groomed to want. And that's, I think, very familiar to our world. That's just very much a part of it.
For sure.
So, I mean, that was definitely drawn, you know, from just the landscape of our universe, unfortunately.
Yeah. Just of, like, you know, being you and the experiences that we've had to go through. And it's true, and it's a shame. And I think I was talking to Hafsa Faisal about this when I did an interview with her, how, you know, I did tell her, like, you know what, as slowly but surely there is progress being made, because I'm grateful to be living now than, you know, even just as, you know, 100 years ago seems like a long time, but in the grand scheme of things, it's like, it's not. And it's like, and even then, you know, women still didn't have the right to vote like 100 years ago, or that's like when they got it. And so, it's something to be said about, even if, like, you know, there are, I think, what do they call it? A subconscious bias. It's like, maybe you don't realize that you see a gender or, you know, whatever, a certain way, but, you know, yeah, there are things that men get away with that women just, maybe slowly we're, you know, inching our way up into, like, being, you know, multidimensional people. You know, it's that's definitely a struggle that she's facing. And she's kind of like, cause she did watch her father, even though he kind of kept her at arm's length and he kept her in the dark a lot, he did still kind of, like, groom her because she was all they had. And so, like, she knew that, but now it's like, it seems like, yeah, she's got to learn all these different moving cogs to the big picture. And it's a lot for her, especially because she's what, like 19 in this?
Not even. She's like 18 and a half.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, oh, by the way, you know, and then she's dealing with, like, the death of her father, and that's a whole situation in and of itself, and that's a mention that she's, like, got a whole kingdom to be in charge of, and you know,
and a big secret with her magic gone.
I thought it was funny because it's like, yeah, Bastion, she can't get too far from him. It's like, how's she going to tell people, like, you know, you're searching for suitors, but you've got a guy here that, wait, why, what is his role on the crew? Like, what are you doing? So it was, like, really funny how you had to kind of, like, navigate that when you're, because it's such a huge part of the story, and it's a part of who she is, obviously, because I think you did a really good job of, you know, illustrating that, what it's like to kind of, like, lose a part of yourself, and but then you feel it in somebody else. And I thought that was such a unique aspect of what she's going through. You know, just as someone who, just coming from a world where obviously we don't know what it's like to wield magic, but, you know, you had to kind of put on the page there of, like, what might this be like if, you know, this, they're in this world with all these capabilities, but what if, you know, so that capability got ripped, and, like, what would that feel like? So I appreciated that too, because it was, like, kind of polarizing, and also for Bastion, because he had no idea what he was doing either. So it's like, you know, he was like, I've got these new abilities, and I don't know, how do I do this? And even then, Amora was like, I don't know how to explain it to you. Like, just, you know, just like, kind of like, yeah, you just do it. You just know. So no, I mean, I could go all over the place with those two. So when you, let me see her. I'm going down. Oh yeah. We can't talk about the ending. I'm not even going to.
I get so many messages about the ending from people already.
No, I was just like, even like 5 days after, you know, I was, it still was sticking with me. I was like, okay, well, good job, Adeline. Like, cause it's like, if it's almost a week later, I'm still a little bit shook, then, you know, it was definitely, quite the story, and quite, you know, you hit us kind of hard there.
Yeah. If I had to get emotional writing, I thought it was only fair that other people should get emotional with me.
Yeah. So was that like the hardest part of writing this second book was, you know, what were the biggest challenges in the writing process?
Yeah. I mean, this whole book was a lot more difficult than All the Stars and Teeth just from, I mean, one, the world, like I was editing this at the start of COVID. And two, just the material is a lot more personal in terms of the characters. It's a lot more introspective. So it was, yeah, it was a lot heavier of a book. Amora is dealing, you know, like you said, with the PTSD. She's dealing with doubt. She doubts not only herself, but also other people. She finds it hard to put her trust in other people.
Yeah.
So it leads to her, you know, making maybe a lot of mistakes or doing a lot of things that would be better off not done or better off done in a different way.
Yeah.
So it was challenging to write somebody who really is just in that super, super dark place while you're also trying to make, you know, the book entertaining to the reader because you don't want to just have 300 pages of somebody spiraling into the darkness.
Right.
So that was definitely a challenge. And just the emotional aspects of it. I think if you like chop the book up into thirds, I think for the last third, I probably cried like 5 times writing that book.
Yeah. I would imagine. Did you go back and forth of how you wanted the story, the end of the story to play out? Or did you kind of always know how things were going to, how things were going to go?
Yeah, I pretty much always knew. The only relationship I kind of went back and forth on without getting into like too much spoiler territory is Amora and Vatea's. Because they definitely have... You know, they have a really fun friendship that I wish could have been more explored in this book. But unfortunately, they're both going through different things.
Yeah.
And they have a lot of different challenges and stuff there. So that ending, I did go back and forth on that one a bit. But everyone else, I pretty much knew going into the story.
Yeah, how things were going to play out. Yeah, because did you write both of the story, both books at the same time, or would you kind of just had an outline when you sold it?
Yeah, just an outline when we sold it. I didn't know if it's kind of funny. So not everybody knows in publishing, like you can tell your editor that you want your book to be 3 books or your series to be 3 books. They might only buy 2. You can say you want 4. They might only buy 3.
Right.
So it's usually best not to write them at the same time, especially if you are a debut, which this was my debut series. Yeah. So I sold All the Stars and Teeth and then just had kind of like a broad idea that I pitched them for the rest of the series. And then it ended up, you know, like they ended up buying 2. So I was like, okay, well, I have to figure out how to finish this book in 2. And like maybe later down the road, we can tell more stories if like people are interested.
Yeah, that's always, I think that's a common, common thought process as I ask a lot of authors the same question, like, how did that come about? Because I think some stories are very long, or some books are very long, but somehow they're squeezed into a duology versus like, I think just for a long time, trilogies were so common. And I don't know, maybe editors are getting burnt out or they just feel like, you know, duologies are maybe more marketable, who knows? It was, I guess there are probably any number of reasons of why, either it's a personal preference or what they're seeing, you know, out in the industry. So
I think it's a marketing thing. Like booksellers maybe wanted it, but it's really funny to me because many of the bigger duologies that I've seen have ended up selling a third book. Yeah. So you have like Carvel or Shelby Mahern and Serpent and Dove. Like they were all sold as duologies and they all have sold a third, maybe fourth. They might have a fourth book. I don't know. So they keep selling more.
Yeah. Well, I guess maybe that's something to look forward to in case there's some more stories that you need to get out into the world. Mm-hmm. Like maybe it's not impossible to like revisit some of that, because there was like so much going on. I love how you had, you know, you made this another sea voyage, but it was like very much, there was an itinerary, obviously, but you had it planned out with specific islands. And I'm glad, I was so excited that we got to see their different types of magic and also how the political events, at first it was like the events of the first book, the ending were, it was mostly war, but it was political too. But you saw the less like violent side of it, I guess. You saw like more strategy, and you know, Amora kind of had to step into that too. And like, I think you touched on this before, like there were things that her decisions that she made that I was thinking I wouldn't do that. You know, I wouldn't have done that, but you know, I'm not a queen of an island kingdom. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like you know, she probably knows better. But yeah, I really enjoyed how creative you got with, not only some of the magics, but I think the last island they visited where, they were combining multiple types of magic and how, that could play out. Well, they had, because that was the whole point, was that Amora was trying to get rid of that system of only learning one mm-hmm. magic. And so we kind of see islands or people like try to, you know, play with both. But I think in that last island they visited was really where you kind of see it all, like almost maybe not the full potential, but you definitely see a bigger potential with, and I don't remember the name of the islands or what, I just remember like, it was just so vivid. And I felt
the elemental one.
I think it was like with the lights and the water and stuff, or the colors, or they were combining like imagery and the elements maybe.
I think it was Veluca. Yeah. I think probably. It was the elemental one.
Yeah. Yeah. I just thought it was so cool how, you know, it was like, oh, I didn't, that's like, I guess you kind of leading up to it, but then it's like, mm-hmm. oh, like, no, this is, you know, you're not just talking about, oh, what, you know, speculating about what the benefits of these combined of citizens or whatever, learning multiple magics. It's like, oh, no, this is pretty fascinating. And this is a good thing. And also, like, not only that, but I think also the pushback that she gets along the way helps her kind of see things, you know, a new way of doing things. Cause mm-hmm. you kind of see how she, yeah, like you said before, like she is doubting herself. And, you know, even though she grew up knowing one way and she grew up knowing that it was going to be her turn eventually. But then, you know, when she gets out there and she starts, you not only like seeing how the other islands are coping and living, but also talking to the people. And it's, I enjoy that some of the conflict that she came up, that she, you know, encountered, it helped her grow, because then mm-hmm. she was kind of like, well, wait a second, maybe this person has a point, or, you know, why didn't I think of that type of thing? And it has huge implications as to like the choices that she might want to make going forward. You know, and I just thought like, you know, I really enjoy, I thought it was like really cool. Cause I think it's definitely a different spin on the whole, when you get to a storyline or a plot that, where there's a monarchy involved and like a kingdom involved, I think, you know, there aren't a whole lot of stories, I don't think, that I've encountered that, go that route, that are kind of like, yeah, there's a rebellion and everything, but, where she just takes matters into her own hands. Like, cause you see some of that old Amora too, in the first mm-hmm. book, where she, you know, on the surface, she appeared super confident. Like she knew what she was doing, but like in her head, she was like totally, you know, okay. You know, like she was running thoughts in her head and she was like getting distracted by cute boys and yeah. And, you know, she's like learning new information that, you know, apparently people very close to her knew and she didn't know. And she was like, why did, you know, and so I, you know, I could ramble on about her forever, but you know, it's just, I really enjoyed it. I loved how, you know, you found a way to make it the politics kind of like, maybe a little eye-opening. I felt like, you know, I was all, you know, I kind of saw Amora's train of thought. Like I understood it very well, where she was like, well, I don't know, maybe he has a point, or maybe they're onto something. And, I thought it was really cool. Cause then it's like, from that point on, she continues to be influenced by everything else that she sees, even though, you know, she's also on a secret mission herself. But it's like, it's just such a loaded trip for her. So it's like, I love, you know, I think you did a really good job of like, just kind of navigating that and getting that across the page and making her like relatable, and just so such a heavy, burden to carry for her. And then she doesn't have her dad this time, which is mm-hmm. like, I think a lot of people can relate to, is, you know, the person that, cause he's in her mind all the time.
Right.
And, so like, did, I think I might have like asked you this the first time around about like her relationship with her father. Like, so what kind of, you know, what was kind of like the writing process or the thought process? And I guess this goes piggybacks off of your, you know, you knew where you wanted things to go and where relationships to go. But, you know, how did you come up with like, you know, how Amora would be dealing this, like without her father, yeah, or without maybe the person who's helped kind of guide her through all of it?
Mm-hmm. So I think one of the most important things from the first book that I tried to show was that she genuinely loves her father and he genuinely loves her. There's not like they don't dislike each other. You know, I feel like in a lot of YA, it's really like toxic relationship, and they do have some toxic, like toxicity in there because he has lied to her.
Yeah.
But at their core, like they very much love and value each other. So when he dies, you know, she mourns for him. She misses him, but she hasn't had a chance to actually do any of that mourning because she's been thrust into this role of power now where everybody is expecting something different from her. And not only that, but also the world around them has completely changed at its core. So the laws that they used to abide, which every island has its own specific magic that no longer exists. So these islands, some of them are struggling because, you know, some of their, how they were making money was because of their magics. But if another island can do that now, you know, there's just all these different elements that go into it. And it wasn't the easy transition that I think she was maybe hoping for. Like, oh, cool, everybody has magic again. Oh, wait. Like, actually, there's a lot of problems that still come with this. Like, I still think it's a good thing, but how are we going to navigate, you know, these new issues while I'm still keeping a secret from my people until I can actually give them everything?
Right, exactly.
So, I mean, she loves her dad and she misses him. And she, I think, a lot of times wonders what it could have been like if they were to have been able to work together, if she actually, if he told her things and they could trust each other, she could trust him, you know, what could their island look like? What could their world look like? What could their kingdom look like? And I think for a big portion of the novel, she's really kind of wondering at that and reminiscing and like, could that have been a thing? So she's definitely, she's struggling. She knows that he messed up. She knows that what he did was wrong and that she has been burdened, you know, with this huge situation that now she has to fix or she feels the need to fix.
Right.
But she still loves him. She like, he's still her dad.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, so I don't know if I missed it cause she never really got to confront him about that, or she kind of did, but it was like in a really high stressful situation. Like there was, their, you know, their place was getting kind of ransacked almost like there was a little bit of a rebellion going on, you know? But yeah, she didn't really get to fully talk about it, talk through it and get maybe the answers that would make her feel better about it or feel better about
it.
And then even like her mom and her aunt, she's got, that's really complicated her relationships with them too, where, you know, she's upset with her aunt for making a decision to, you know, she kind of puts part of the blame on her for, you know, forcing it to only go one way, forcing the events to only go one way. And then her mom, she's kind of, you know, I guess it didn't go too deep into it, but Amora kind of was just like, I think from what I remember, she maybe felt a little bit more, she felt a little bit of a betrayal with her mom too. Was I getting that right? Or,
It's just, she feels the need to one, protect her mom because she sees her mom struggling a lot. And I mean, her mom's not queen. Amora is the queen. Right. So she feels that need to protect her. And also she, you know, kind of has to grin and bear the fact that her mom wants her protected, and the way her mom sees that happening is to, you know, pair Amora up with a husband who the kingdom can get behind and who they can kind of stop giving her such a hard time.
Because I remember, because I guess it wasn't necessarily like, you didn't necessarily go into like, oh, what did her mom know? It was kind of like, well, you know, unfortunately maybe her mom did know more, but she unfortunately, she had to play the game too. So it was kind of like, and now Amara's like, okay, well, what, you know, and yeah, I definitely got that where she, it's an interesting dynamic because it's like, yeah, it's your daughter, but she's also queen. Like, and it's like, you can kind of like guide her the best that you can because of what you know, whether or not she has been making, her mom has been, maybe hasn't necessarily been making huge decisions, but she's been on the sidelines like almost the whole time. And so she has been an observer. And so she's trying to use that and give that advice to Amora. And unfortunately, Amora just I could sense that she agreed with her, but she just didn't like, what she was hearing, you know,
right.
Like that that's what it came down to. And
it's like always her thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And even then she was like, well, what? They're like, oh, you know, talking about producing an heir. She's like, well, I don't have to get married to do that. It's like, okay, that's true. But like, come on, you know, there's a certain way that this should go down because, you know, all eyes are on you now.
And I can see her mom just like pulling out her hair like, yeah but just like, do it, please.
It's like, do you understand? It's kind of, yeah, it's one of those things where it's like the chain of events, you can't just like kind of go back and it's not something, oh, we'll just try this out and we'll see how it goes. Like, no, like you can't, it's not easy to do. But yeah. And I think I kind of relate to more that way where I'm kind of like, maybe a little resistant, or maybe it's just because we're growing up in the time that we are, where we're seeing just like, you know, a lot of more opportunities, a lot of more, societal views for women, even though some of them are still so stagnant. I think there is some progress being made. And I think I definitely, related to Amora in the sense that like, well, no, I never, for me personally, I was just a person who was focused on my career. I didn't, you know, growing up, I didn't really think like, oh, I'm going to get married and have babies. And this is what you're supposed to do. It was kind of like, you know, I guess that was just a part that I was just more so focused on my career. And that could be just a personal thing. Cause I know so many, cause like now I am married and I have two babies and I'm like still trying to focus on my career, but luckily it's a little more possible now than maybe it was some time ago. So I think that's like definitely how I related to Amora in that sense, where it's, yeah, you don't, it's like, yeah, your mom's right, unfortunately, like, or she's at a point and maybe, you know, because she's been queen also, like maybe she could, maybe she's, you should take some of the stuff she says to heart. Yeah. And then with, so I think, no, I thought that was an interesting relationship to explore too, because she doesn't have her dad, and that's definitely where her parental relationship was the most strong. She definitely had a stronger relationship with her dad versus her mom. And, you know, you get that struggle in the page where she's like, you know, she wishes, this is the whole book, she just wishes her dad was still there.
Right.
And it's, yeah, yeah. It's heartbreaking.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed that. And yeah, I think Amora's, you know, a whole part of this story is her kind of like trying to find her way. And what does she believe in? Because nobody, as far as I remember, and I mean, I wrote it, so I hope I remember most of it. Like, nobody really presents a bad idea to her. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of the ideas that she's presented from everybody are pretty good ideas. And they right. all have, you know, a point. And they can all be helpful to her, but it's just very much about what can she feel comfortable moving forward with, and what does she feel like the kingdom actually needs at its core? Because a lot of these people too still don't know the full truth that her magic is gone, that she's hiding that yeah. from her people, and that she needs to break a curse in order to actually restore them properly and fully in the way that they should have always existed. So, I mean, combine that with the doubts that she has yeah. of herself and her inability to trust other people because she has been lied to her entire
yeah.
life.
Yeah.
So she very much kind of, whenever she's really presented with an opinion, it's like, okay, I got to pull back. Don't really trust you. Let me right. think about this for a second and figure out how I feel good about moving forward with this.
Yeah. And I think that's where, you know, Farrick, he was a good number two, because I think that's, you know, where you kind of bring that, you bring up a good point where she, you know, she considers all the ideas that are brought to her, and where she's like, yeah, she has to kind of step back and be like, well, you know, It's, you know, yeah, there's that self-doubt because she's been lied to. And it's like any new idea seems like very plausible because she's like, well, I wouldn't have seen this way before, but everybody's been lying to me. So who knows? Maybe this is a great idea. And maybe like, you know, and she, you know, I'm happy for her that she had another person that she like truly trusted and cared about so much to give her, you know, the tough love and the wise advice and, you know, really, someone who I like that relationship where they were, you know, engaged to be married. And then, they just ended up being like the best of friends and she trusted him almost as much as she would trust a husband. And maybe if not more, you know, like she respected his opinions and she respects his, you know, his experience and the fact that like, you know, he wasn't just some, it was politically, beneficial to them, to the marriage, but you kind of see more why it was like, yeah, it was politically beneficial to have Ferrick as his fiance, but then it's like, there was a reason for that. And we really got to see Ferrick shine in the second book in that regard, because I
love him.
Yeah, I know. I appreciate him too. It was just like, you know, it, because of course, you know, maybe you swoon for Bastion, but at the same time, it's like Ferrick is so lovable too. And he is just like, got such a good head on his shoulders, and he's not so, you know, he's not intimidated by her per se.
Right.
Even a couple times she had to be like, no, Ferrick, this is an order. Like, you'd be like, okay, I get you, but like, just remember who you're talking to. Right.
So yeah. I think the thing about him too, is that he doesn't want anything from her anymore. Like in the first book, he did have feelings for her, or at least believed that he had feelings for her. But you know, now she is with somebody else. He's starting to have feelings for somebody else. Mm-hmm. He only wants now what's best for her. He wants her to, you know, have a good life and to feel like, you know, healthy again, like a healthy mindset again, like happy. That's all he wants for her. And I think that's why she trusts him so much, because, you know, with Bastion, there's stuff there, you know, he wants to be with her. There's that agenda. So there's always something with somebody else, but with him, it's just very much just like, what is best for you? Like, I want you to be happy.
Right. And then, yeah. And that's also like, you know, with mentioning Bastion, it's, I felt for him too, because it's like, yeah, he clearly like has such strong feelings for her. And on top of like straight up having a part of her, like being able to feel a part of her all the time. And then, you know, he's got to watch her put up this facade of potential, you know, he's got to watch like the woman he loves go off and find another mate for, you know, for the good of the people, for the good of the kingdom. And it's, yeah, it's like, I was struggling with him too. Cause it's like, how heartbreaking would that be? It's like, you know, he's this big, you know, macho pirate, and he's like, you know, he's sailed and had all these adventures, and he's got such a heartbreaking history himself. And then he's got, you know, you just like, you can't help but feel for him. Cause you're just like, okay, like, cause maybe at the end of, towards the end of the first book, you're kind of like, well, maybe like this pair is still gonna be great. You know, maybe they're still going to go strong. And then it's all over the place. And the second book, you're just like, wait, will they, won't they, how is she going to do? What is she going to do? Wait, she met another cute boy. Like what, is like, what, it, you know, how is she going to work with this? So yeah, it was, the pacing was great. The story, the details were great. I loved what you did with the other characters, with Matea, you know, cause her, yeah, I was trying to be spoiler free. Hard. yeah, you give her some new emotions and new conflicts as well. And almost everybody here faces a little heartbreak, and, you know, it's kind of like pick your poison, you know, like who do you feel for the worst?
It's bittersweet. Everything. I feel like the book ended the way it should have and was always meant to, but that doesn't necessarily mean everything's always going to be happy. I mean, this is a very kind of volatile new world that they are embarking into.
You've never shied away from any of the gory details and all that other fun stuff. So I think last time we were spoke about the first book, I think I was asking you like, oh, what were your favorite scenes to write? And you're like, and you did say like, I don't know, this is kind of weird, but I think I like writing where she gets to use her magic. And it's just like,
all the fight scenes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's no, but I see that. Cause then it's like, you're allowed to get a little, gory and dirty and, mm-hmm. You're allowed to have, you know, put your characters through some stuff, and you gotta get those details out there. So
yeah, this one was different because she doesn't have her magic anymore, so I didn't get to like do all the fight scenes that I wanted to do. There's still, you know, a couple in there. They're very different now.
Oh yeah.
But I remember I sent this to my editor and I was like, I don't know, like, is this a good book? This is very political. I'm not like killing as many people. I don't understand.
Right. Yeah, it's just kind of like, I know, when I was like thinking about it, I was writing my review, I was like, no, people who were waiting for this book are definitely going to be rewarded. Either, even if they are going to miss, you know, I saying that, you know, I think the politics side of it and the PR side of it that you go a little heavy with, I don't think that's boring at all. I think it's just as important as, you know, getting that physical conflict in there too. But it depends on pacing. It depends on character development. And I think a lot of, you know, especially with what Amora is going through with her mental health, I think, you know, dealing with your mental health issues, I think that was one of the running themes of 2020 anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, just being forced, you know, the world is kind of turned upside down and a lot of people had to change what they usually do, either to take care of themselves or to take care of others. You know, our options are limited. And like you were saying before, we were hoping to be past this by now. Cause it's like, it's almost been a year.
Yeah.
It's been about a year since, you know, most of the United States started going into lockdown. And so it's, it's, even though it doesn't seem like it's been a year, it's crazy. But it's, yeah, I would say that for me personally, at least, and like, there are a lot of authors that I talk to about it, that they mention that, you know, one of the harder parts about getting through the year and releasing a book last year was dealing with the mental health part of it and just kind of either using that to pour into your productivity or using that into, you know, whatever works that you have on your project list, on your to-do list for the future. It's kind of just like, you know, but I always love it that, you know, use this form of entertainment, whether it's being like producing literature or consuming literature. I think it's all very important, you know, to have, especially in over the past year, where it's even if it's been a little more challenging to get the word out there.
Yeah.
I think everybody's, yeah, just had to get a little more creative into telling you like, here, this is what I got going on. And you know, please buy my book, even though I know, you know, it's like, you know, you don't want to say like, I know things are tough right now and maybe people aren't working as much as they want to, but like, please still get my book. Like,
I'm just glad bookstores are open again. Like, that was rough. We were all just like,
cause that's such a huge part of your press and your promotion strategy. Yeah. And to have that, like, have that kind of wiped out and then have to like get creative and go virtual. And just still, you know, I know that you kind of miss that energy that you get face to face meeting readers and, you know, just seeing the face like in person and just, you know, there's that certain energy, that certain vibe that goes into it. And yeah you know, it sucks. It sucks to like miss that part of it for sure.
I'm hopeful that it comes back. You know, I'm curious to see how publishing changes in the long term because of this. I'm crossing my fingers, you know, 2022, I have a book releasing too, and I'm crossing all my fingers that things are open again.
Right.
For that. And I get that face-to-face time.
You would think if you like, you know, don't get your hopes up for another year and a half, then maybe.
Right.
You hope that if you're like, maybe that's realistic. So no, I'm right there with you. I'm hoping that at least a year from now, we'll be able to like not have to wear masks all the time, but
you know, I mean, I probably still will on like airplanes and stuff. I feel like that's something like I will adopt for the long term, but I want to go to cons again for sure. And like book events.
Yeah. It's like, just bring all the hand sanitizer, whatever you guys do. Like, it's like, no, you're not alone. You know, I definitely missed it too. And that's why I appreciate being able to do this for you guys and you know, that you could still make time to squeeze us into whatever else, other virtual events you have going on and promotions. Cause I follow you on Instagram and every time I see something like, you know, counting down or how you're releasing you're releasing little special, you know, tchotchkes with the pre-orders. And I just like get so excited, like to see the artwork and to see fan art too. That was like kind of, cause I think, yeah, sometimes you do promote like the fan art and it's like so cool to see how, so you know, cool. Other readers, yeah, how like such talented people, like readers, like how they pictured certain things, like either the character or even certain scenes. It's like, I mm-hmm. imagine that's so meaningful to you, so flattering to you too.
Oh yeah, that's like one of the coolest parts. There's somebody drew Ferrick with a ponytail, and I had never envisioned with the ponytail when I saw it. I was like, yeah, that's really cool.
That's so funny. Yeah, I know. It's yeah, because it could go. It's fun to see like how other people picture it, even as a reader, and I'm seeing like fellow readers' artwork too, and I'm just like, oh yeah, like I get just as much out of it because you have a certain picture in your head. But I imagine it's like tenfold for you as the writer to see like your work just resonating so well with people, and to the point where they want to spend hours on, you know, creating artwork based on, you know, what you've poured your heart and soul into doing. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, we're wrapping up here. That hour went by pretty quickly. So before we go, let's see, I think we've covered everything that I wanted to cover, but I'll go ahead and ask you about your future projects that you mentioned. What are you working on, and what do we have to look forward to?
I am working on a book. It's called Belladonna. It is a gothic infused romantic mystery starring Death himself. It is about a girl who has to team up with Death in order to basically figure out what is happening with her family. I'm sorry, I'm like trying not to spoil anything. Yeah. She is an orphan. She is kind of inherited into this family, into this manor called Thorngrove, where somebody has just died, and another girl, her cousin, is quickly following in those footsteps. And she is approached, the main character Signa is approached by the spirit of her aunt who just died, who told her that it is a murder. Actually, she did not die of natural causes like everybody thought. She was murdered, and Signa needs to figure out who the murderer is in this giant sprawling gothic manor, and she needs to team up with Death in order to do it because she can see spirits.
That sounds really cool.
I pitched that. That was my first time pitching it, and that was just like, I don't know if any of that made sense.
No, it does. It's really cool. It's like you did it in a way to make it interesting without, I'm assuming you're revealing what you want to reveal in terms of pitching it to potential readers.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, it has hints of like Secret Garden, you know, like a girl goes into this family. I was inspired by the Secret Garden musical, actually, because I used to work in live theater, and I thought of this book plot as we were working on that show, and I was having to watch it, you know, like 8 times a week. So it's a really dark mystery, romantic Secret Garden with Death.
Yeah. I think I've like seen, bits and pieces on Instagram, and, I love your enthusiasm, and it's so funny to see, like, you know, I've heard it because I think you first mentioned it maybe only a couple months ago, right?
I think we announced it in September. So next time I pitch it, it'll make a lot more sense. Yeah.
Right. No, I know. You have to get through, you know, your successful sequel. So once you can like maybe say goodbye or, you know, see you later to Visidia, you can, you know, focus on and, you know, but I think you explained it very well. Just like I'm already a little invested, you know, and I hope that, you know, if we keep in touch, we'll have you back so that you can talk again about Belladonna and anything else. Is that going to just be a standalone novel, or are you looking at another?
We kind of pitched it as a standalone novel, but I just turned it in. I turned in the first draft to my editors last week, I think. And I definitely left it on an ending that is very open to a sequel. So I'm kind of just waiting for them to read it right now. Yeah. I already have the title picked out and everything. So I'm just like, come on, read it. Let me talk
to you. There you go. So, just like kind of tease them a little bit. Like, don't you want to know what happens next? Like,
yes. I mean, it's very heavy on romance. And I definitely want to explore that more in a second book, because Signa has powers. She has Death's powers when she is in the state of like half between life and half between death. Mm. And you just don't get to explore enough of that in one book. So
yeah,
I'm crossing my fingers. I'm going to wait to talk to them. And as far as All the Stars and Teeth goes, I think it's very much a see you later.
Yeah. Sort of yeah. Thing.
Yeah. There's just so much there.
Though, oh, for sure. I know that Vitea and alone could, you know, have her own short, you know, series of short stories. And I know that readers would definitely want to know more of her. But no, I'm so excited, and I can't wait for the book to come out so that I can see what everybody else thinks of it too, because I'm, you know, like I said, I when I finished reading All the Tides of Fate, I, you know, I had one of those, I don't know if you want to call it a book hangover, but I had a moment of
yes,
this kind of, yeah, where I had to like, I think I was just like staring and letting it marinate for a little while. And I, like, my husband was on the couch next to me, and I think he might've turned over to me and asked if I was okay or what happened. Cause I was just like, oh, like I was like audibly just, a mix between frustrated and a little bit brokenhearted, and it was kind of like, oh, but it was such a great ending. It was so, everything was almost so perfect in the way that
it happened.
But it was still like, oh my God.
I'm so excited for people to read it. I think I'm going to do a spoiler chat like early in March, literally just so I could talk to everybody.
Yeah, right? No, for sure. For sure. And I know, I'm sorry that this had to be a little spoiler free too, that you could, like, I'm just, you know, I'm a little antsy about it too. So no, I'm excited for you. So February 2nd, All the Tides of Fate. And the first book is All the Stars and Teeth. It's already out, so people still have time to catch up, which I would say they're both, not super easy reads, but they're easy to get sucked into. So they're not,
thank you.
Yeah. I remember the first book I finished, and I was excited to, you know, pick up my book again. So it was, you know, and the second book just, you know, did that just as well. So yay. Good job. And I'm excited for you, and good luck. And, you know, I look forward to what else, you know, whatever else with Belladonna and anything else you got going on that you have to offer to us all. So,
well, thank you. And thank you for having me. And I hope that you are staying safe and healthy, and that yeah. next time we talk, it'll be at a con.
Let's hope. Yes. Just like, we'll keep our fingers crossed. We'll be realistic for in a couple of years. We'll be,
yeah.
No, not this year. Maybe
2022.
Yeah. Yep, exactly. I know. No, I miss it too. So yeah, we'll keep my fingers crossed with you that we'll be able to talk in person. But yeah, so good luck. And thank you so much for talking with us.
Yeah, thank you so much. Have a good rest of your day.
All right, you too.
Thank you.
Bye.
And thanks again to Adeline Grace for joining us, and Megan for always doing great reviews here and great interviews with our authors. If you enjoyed this, we hope you join us some more for our weekly news and the new interviews as they continue to roll out. And please take a moment, give us a rating or review, and share this episode with somebody else. Share it with your book club. Share it with fellow friends. And let's see if we can continue to grow our audience and community over here at the Nerd Cantina. Thanks again. We'll talk to you next week, nerds.